Blog Talk Radio.
Now, in its second edition, Carol Dean's popular book, The Art of Film Funding, has 12 new chapters to cover all areas of film financing and how to avoid expensive pitfalls. Learn how to start with an idea and end with a trailer. How to make an ask for money. Create your story structure and your trailer. Legal advice, fair use, successful crowdfunding, how to ask for music rights, and what insurance you can't shoot without. Available on Amazon under Carol Dean and at FromTheHeartProductions.com. Hi, and welcome to The Art of Film Funding. I'm your co-host, Claire Papin, along with Carol Dean, author of the best-selling book, The Art of Film Funding. Carol is also the founder and president of From the Heart Productions and the host of this show. Don Schwartz is an actor and journalist. His book, Telling Their Own Stories, Conversations with Documentary Filmmakers, is available from Amazon. His film reviews and filmmaker profiles appear regularly on FromTheHeartProductions.com, and Don posts new reviews almost daily. He holds BA, MA, PhD degrees in psychology and counseling. Carol and Don Schwartz, Carol Dean and Don Schwartz, love documentaries, and they created this show to encourage people to watch more docs.
Yes, Claire. What we want to do is support documentary filmmakers because both of us believe that they are our greatest asset. These are people who put their heart into their films. Sometimes it takes them 5-10 years to get a film made. And we often forget the fact that they have to raise the money and produce the film, and many times you'll find that they are producers, directors, or producers, editors. They do everything to get the films made. And once they're made, most of the time they are important historical documents with stories that are unique and make a contribution to society. So it's important
to us that
we share as much information about them as we can to encourage people to watch more docs.
Well, Carol, I also understand you're reviewing the recent Delaney Ellis film, Ground Operations, today. She was a winner of the Roy Dean Film Grant a few years ago, right?
Yes. She is a delightful person. We're born on the same day, and we have a lot in common. I just adore her. She is a dedicated, hardworking filmmaker. And when you go to groundoperations.net, you're going to see a very well-designed website. So I really would like Don to start off today and tell us what he thinks of the film. Then I'll come back with my notes.
Well, I loved it. It's a unique documentary. And Delaney Ellis, I'd like to spell her name, D-U-L-A-N-I-E, Ellis, E-L-L-I-S. She released it in 2013, and you can get the film directly from her by going to groundoperations.net. And this is a literal swords to plowshares story. It involves solving two American problems with one solution. What Delaney is covering is a project that trains Iraqi and Afghanistan veterans in how to farm. And the benefit of this is a lot of them are suffering from PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and being on the land and dealing with plants is having a healing effect on them. And another problem it solves, which was kind of new to me, was that there are not enough farmers in the United States. So it's also helping us solve the issue of getting more farmers on the land. And I was totally moved by it. I'm moved by people who have been so wounded and moved by seeing them find some help with their wounding. And another thing about the veterans learning how to farm is they're also discovering the issues about food quality and what farming can do if not done properly to our land. So our food is being compromised and our agricultural land is being compromised by agribusiness. And these veterans may end up also not just helping us with food, creation, but helping us to improve our food. So this is a really important film, and it's roughly self-distributed, so we want to get the word out as much as we can for you to see the film and to learn how you can support what Grand Operations is doing.
Absolutely. It's a terrific project. And one of the reasons that we are running out of farmers is they're retiring. It's 100,000 farmers retiring in the next few years, and they need people to fill that job. And Delaney's film is talking about vets because they have, with PTSD, they don't feel comfortable in confined spaces. And they're used to being outdoors from the war. So it's perfect for them to be outdoors and work with plants. And, I garden here at the beach, and I find it very healing. So I think gardening is the way to go. Well, being a judge for the Roy Dean Film Grant for years, I'm really interested when I look at a proposal for a grant. And I'm saying this for all of you who are looking for grants to make your docs. I want to know what you're going to do with the film once it's finished. And most people, I hate to say, but maybe 50% or more will put film festivals. Well, wonderful. But I taught at a lot of film festivals, and I know that most of the people there are locals or retirees, and there's very few distributors in most film festivals. So that's not the audience. The secret for winning grants is to tell us how you're going to get this film the audience that it belongs to. And Delaney did that very well in her proposal for the Dean Grant. And she's lived up to what she put in that proposal. She's done a stupendous job. When you look at her groundoperations.net, it's the first page is really brilliant. She's got all of her awards that she's won. She has joined the movement, so she can get your name and address, which is important. She's got her trailer on there. She's got magazines and places where she's been featured, like Fox News, NBC News, ABC News. And then she makes you feel very comfortable telling you to join the mission. She has testimonials. And most importantly, she has resources for veterans. So this is walking your talk. This is really doing what you say you made the film for. And she's got a calendar on there. And if you click on the calendar with the dates that are highlighted, it'll come up where the film is being shown. So, like, if you click on one, it's Ground Operation Santa Cruz, Veterans Alliance. Register now. So if you live in that area and you want to see the film, you can go to the Veterans Alliance and see it. Delaney has taken this film all across America and done very well with reaching the target audience for the film. And I highly recommend that you go to her website, take a look at her brilliant resources, how she has really put everything on there for farmers and for veterans, for both sides of it. And she's really found the heart of the film. She says, Ground Operations is a documentary film and social action campaign that champions the growing network of combat veterans who are transitioning into careers as sustainable farmers, ranchers, and artisan food producers. Let's help them get started and build their resources so the veterans can create healthy lives for themselves. It's a heartfelt film. Most importantly, it is on the street, it's across the nation, and it's being seen by those people that she made the film for. So bravo, Delaney. You've done a marvelous job. We sincerely appreciate that.
Yes, Carol, let's give that website address again. That's groundoperations.net, correct?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, great. Uh-huh.
So, Don, and now yes. Tell us what you think about the film Iranian Drive-In.
Well, this was a touching film. In one sense, it's an old story of the people versus the environment, people versus pollution, that is. But it does it in a very human way. It keeps the statistics to minimum, and the focus is on the people. It's directed by Susan Barraza and was released in 2013, and it's one of the three films we're talking about this hour that is distributed by First Run Features, which is one of the big heroes in the world of documentary film distribution. They have a huge catalog. And the documentary takes place in a small Colorado town, I think it's Southern Colorado, that is facing economic disaster. They're in the midst of it, and they would like to get out of it. And they previously had uranium mining and uranium milling as their primary source of income. And now the controversy there is they want to bring it back. And Barraza covers both sides of the conflict, the people of the town that want to bring uranium mining back so that they can have a livelihood, and the people that do not want to have the health effects and the environmental disaster that the mining can bring. And Barraza covers both of those sides. She gives equal time and equal energy to the voices from both those sides. And it made me wonder, I wanted to get a small room and get the leaders of these both sides together and tell them, okay, you have to fight on behalf of the other side, the people that are concerned about health and environment. Help the people that are concerned about their livelihood find another way of making a living. And then the people that are concerned about the issue of health and environment. Let's see, hold on a second. They have the health environment. Make sure I'm losing myself here, so I apologize. But that's the idea. Both sides need to help the other side sincerely.
Right, They do. Because, the town is really divided because some people want the mine because there is no place else to work there, and they've got homes and families, and they want to stay in that location. And so they're trying to hold out. They've been holding out for several years for this mine to be opened, and it's the Mountain Sheep Alliance sued Montrose County because they said that they alleged that Montrose County made a backroom deal with the Uranium Fuel Corporation, Nucola, and to build in an area that was zoned for agricultural use. So it's a beautiful location, a very quiet valley, and they say this is the wrong location. We don't want you to put that uranium mine there because it's radioactive, and you can't see it or smell it, but it is really harmful. And so he found people who had worked at a uranium plant nearby that was closed, and the whole city was cordoned off because it was contaminated and that nobody can live there anymore from what happened with the uranium. So now they're saying, well, the uranium company is saying, but we have new procedures and we're going to be very careful and we promise nothing's going to happen again. But then the filmmaker takes us to some interviews of people who did work in uranium mines, and you find the people dying at 44 with leukemia are 50 years old with cancer. I mean, they're all dying very young. The average age in America is 75, and that's still low according to many other countries. So when you find people dying in 40s and 50s that were working in the plant, you can pretty much be assured that it was from the leakage. But it's just that they all suffered horrible deaths with lots of pain and suffering, which this is what they're very upset about. And the water. People living near the existing plant had two good wells, and both were polluted by the uranium and the heavy metals from the mine that was closed. So before the people bought their property, they asked the city how to test the water. And the city told them where to go to test it, but they didn't say to test for heavy metals and uranium in your water. So these people drank poison for 8 years, and boy, are they upset, and they should be. So I think she did a marvelous job showing both sides, and it all boils down to me, to corporations not caring about people. I mean, they're allowing people to work under conditions that are inhumane, and they deliberately hide information, and they refuse. Many people who went back who were ill from working in the mine that was closed went back when they found they had cancer several years later, and they refused to help them in any way. So it's the corporations overriding, where their profits override the humans and human concern and care for your fellow man. So I really recommend it.
Yeah, Carol, what I was wondering about is the mindset of the people that see the only way that they can have economic development is by polluting industry. That somehow that's the only thing that will save us. And I wanted like to get them together and say, we have to do some brainstorming here. That's not the only enterprise in the world that you can be productive with.
Exactly. She showed a miner who was growing tomatoes in a little hothouse because he had to make a living. That is a lot cleaner and nicer job as far as I'm concerned, yet he yearned to get back into the mine where he could make more money. So I don't know that they will ever have the proper safety regulations for uranium mines. Yet to be seen, because corporations are not known for telling the truth.
They deny and they lie. Well, of course, to state the obvious, I would just have the town focus on green energy production.
Well, you know what? Think about the next film we're going to talk about, Growing Cities. If these people did what is going across the country right now, they might pull themselves out and find a way to make a lot of money. So you tell us what you think of Growing Cities.
Well, Growing Cities is about the rise of urban farming in the United States, and it's a fun film. It was directed by Dan Sussman, and the cinematographer is Andrew Monboquet, and I'm going to spell that one, Andrew Monboquet, Monbouquett. They're two young men, and they're covering the story in a very lighthearted, fun way. It's a totally fun film to see. Their base is Omaha, Nebraska. And from there, we visit urban farms between New York City and the West Coast, San Francisco and Seattle. And I was fascinated. I want to mention this. They covered a lot of different kinds of urban farming. And one of them was a woman in Manhattan that has designed chic hydroponic garden equipment, which Manhattanites can install in their expensive condos in the south-facing picture windows. So you have go ahead.
I want to talk about that. That is such a great idea, and it looked like it was very inexpensive, Don.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been telling my daughter, you know what, I could grow all my salad stuff in this window. I just don't know how, but it's so hot in here. And right now I have a couple of plants who are just basking in the sun, loving every minute of it. So I'm seriously thinking of putting one of those in my house.
Yeah, it's aesthetic, it's chic, and that one little bit really stood out in that movie that covered so much territory.
It did stand out because it's something that everybody can do. Good. I think the film brings up the issues and then it gives you plenty of ways to solve it. And
absolutely.
What's so interesting, these are like young guys. I don't think they've ever made a film, have they?
I have to look that up. But if they have, it'd be not very many. They're very young men. This might be their first film, but they did a terrific job. And by the way, their website is growingcitiesmovie.com, growingcitiesmovie.com, and they have a tremendous amount of information about urban farming. you will become an urban farmer. Watch out if you go to that website and see this film.
Yes. Well, it's. I think I remember reading that one of the filmmakers had made a short or made something before, and then they got this. They got into the idea of cities giving land to people to farm. Now that's done in England. They have allotted spaces where people can have their own little gardens, and it's really enjoyed. I've never seen it so much in the United States as it is now. So they bring up the issues, and then they take you around the country and show you what's going on. And because basically they think we should have more gardens, and especially around our homes and in vacant lots, and they're absolutely right. I think it's wonderful when you see fruit trees growing. And I noticed that we're in California, and they have all these beautiful trees growing, but very few fruit trees in the city areas. I noticed that the health food store planted orange and nectarines in their parking lot, which makes a lot of sense. In some cities where they have lemons and oranges growing, I've read about women who put together crews to go out, pick this fruit, and give it to the poor. And that's the direction that we should be going in. When you watch the film, you're going to be so encouraged to work on getting some land for yourself from your city. Portland was one city where they had great gardens, and they gave the food to people. Everything was free. The labor was donated, the plants coming in were donated, and the food going out was donated. This is... We're back to who we really are, nurturing and supporting each other. So the film talks about the wasted human potential, and that's us. That's the homeless, the people coming out of jail, of gang members, ex-gang members, and people recovering from substance abuse, all who need a new start. These jobs in some cities give them a reference for other work. One place is Wood Street Urban Farms in Inglewood, south side of Chicago. And Growing Homes operates three organic farms with a job training program. And they have job training programs for unemployed. And people, they say they want to work. Since, you know, the people get out of prison and you can't get a job. So Growing Homes gives them a second chance. They train them for how to conduct themselves in an interview, how to apply for jobs, and they believe that there's a lot of personal transformation and growth by growing food. Well, of course, because you're dealing with a living plant. And these people were so impressed with putting a seed in the ground and watching it grow. They seem to love it. And I think that that seed is a metaphor for them growing in their own lives. Because they're there to plant the seeds, nurture and take care of it, water it, and then they harvest it and take it to market. And they are educating the workers in nutrition, and they look healthy. They look very healthy, particularly for people who've been in prison with bad diets and homeless. They are paying attention, and they're growing. So Detroit has twice the national average of unemployed. It's more like 50% there. And they have so many empty lots. And they say that fewer than 10% of the, well, 50% of all the lots are empty now, and fewer than 10% are occupied. So as people leave the city, they get foreclosed on. So what's happening is they have lost all the super grocery chains with the fresh produce. So they're calling Detroit a state of emergency as far as nutritious, healthy, garden, fresh food. So it has this opportunity for re-urbanizing about how the land can be used, and they're using it for agriculture. So there were 103,000 vacant lots in Detroit. Unbelievable. So the black community thinks that within the system that they should help provide the food is similar to the social justice. It refers to the idea that everyone has a right to access healthy, affordable, and culturally appropriate foods. So that is Detroit. I think it's really a film worth watching. It's inspiring. And if you have a south-facing window, you really might consider this urban hydroponic farm. So I guess you could find it online, Don, right, if you just Googled hydroponic window farming?
Yes, but that the website, growingcitiesmovie.com, it has everything you need to become an urban farmer. The website is almost integral to the movie. You could start with the movie and
right.
go to the website or vice versa.
They did just like Delaney. They really walk in their talk.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, let's get into the next film. What did you think about Every 3 Seconds?
Every 3 Seconds, I loved it. Carol, this is an epic documentary film. It's directed by Daniel G. Karslake, and I need to spell this name, K-A-R-S-L-A-K-E. And it was released this year and distributed by First Run Features. And what Daniel Karslake has done is taken five different people, five different stories, and all the people are ordinary, and these ordinary people have made immeasurable contributions to the world. And Daniel Karslake has woven those five stories together into a tapestry of a film. The first one is Charlie Simpson, who was 7 years old at the time that he started a project, and he ended up raising $240,000 for Haitian earthquake relief, a seven-year-old child. The next one is John Nesbitt, who ended up developing a specialized cell phone texting program for a region of Africa where access to health care was previously difficult to impossible to get. And obviously that's particularly timely given the current Ebola crisis. And then Lisa Shannon initiated an international movement, Run for Congo Woman, and she wanted to address the years of oppression, assault, rape, torture, maiming, and killing of women in the Democratic Republic of Congo. And she, again, just an ordinary person that she had no idea she would be involved with anything like this. The next one is Ingrid Monroe, and she took microfinance, which I imagine most people know about what that is, but if not, it's helping people that are in extreme poverty come out of that by very small loans. And she took microfinance into higher realms by creating an institution that serves 170,000 people in Kenya. And Carol, I found this Ingrid Monroe story about microfinance to be deserving of its own documentary. And it
absolutely
was,
agree. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the fifth
she
one
had
is,
it.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
The fifth one is Gloria Henderson, and she's in North Carolina, so this includes the United States. And she organized a gleaning program, and gleaning was a new word to me, G-L-E-A-N-I-N-G, and which refers to searching for and using produce which has been abandoned. And she developed a program for doing just that for people in her area, in her region, and it became a state institution.
I love that part because she got the church involved and she got the people from the church out there and she got the whole community involved in going out to pick up the produce that is left in the fields because it isn't desirable. It doesn't fit the standard size, you know, potatoes that are too small or potatoes too big that people would not want to buy. We've gotten so picky with our grocery shopping, and we think everything should look absolutely gorgeous. So we're passing up a lot of good food, and we're leaving it out in the fields. And I really appreciated the work she was doing.
Yeah, Carol, it would take a heart of glass to not be really moved by any one of the work that these people have done. And you put the five together, this is a really powerful film.
It is, and they all work from the premise that, can't I do that? You know, Of course I can do that. They didn't, it was Lisa who, she never was a runner. She had lost her father, and she was still in mourning for her father. And then she started seeing on the, I think she saw it on Oprah about these women and how they are so oppressed and mistreated. And so she started running, and her mother would pick her up, and she would be totally exhausted, so tired she'd just be crying. But eventually she learned how to run. She felt that was the way out. It was so she ran a 30-mile trail run, and that got it started. And since then, thousands have joined this Run for Congo women. So she just didn't have any idea that she couldn't do it, and that's the secret to success. You have to believe in yourself. The young kid, the 7-year-old, who said, I'm going to do something about this. The parents looked at each other, but they didn't tell him he couldn't do it, which was fabulous. So then he gets everything ready and says to his parents, okay, now you have to send this to all your friends. And they were like, oh, no, we don't want to bother anybody. Oh, no, you have to send it. Oh, gosh, so they did, and it took off like a firecracker. Of course it was a great idea. I think it's that we're back to what did Mother Teresa say? We can't do such great deeds, but we can do small deeds with great love. And that's what these are.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And yeah. the website is every3seconds, that's all spelled out, every3seconds, all spelled out, .net. And like the other websites we're talking about, that has a tremendous amount of information how you can respond to seeing the film and how you can become involved.
Yeah, it's a good film, very good film. It's uplifting, and that's what we need. And you see, we get a lot of docs, and I appreciate the work the filmmaker does that tell us of horrendous problems that we're facing. And more than likely, they will give us solutions. But this film was only a solution-oriented film. Look at this. Look how these people found something. And it took Lisa out of her mourning for her father. She got up and did something to help people. The young boy, I mean, that will affect his life forever because he will be empowered by what he achieved to know that, yes, you can do the impossible. What seems the impossible? Don't bother me. I know I can do it. That's the attitude that we all have to have and jump in and help our fellow man. I sincerely believe it. Okay, so now the next film we have is the Alex Gibney story, Mr. Dynamite. Tell us what you think.
Okay, Mr. Dynamite, The Rise of James Brown. It was produced, directed by Alex Gibney, as you said, and Carol, I think Alex Gibney deserves a Lifetime Achievement Award. He's made such great films. This time, he's telling the story of James Brown, and it covers the story really from his birth in South Carolina through the loss of his parents at a very early age. He had an impoverished childhood. He ended up in prison as a teenager for several years for stealing clothes out of a car. And then he wound up living the life of James Brown, a very, very successful soul and pop performer. And so the film's title is a little bit misleading, The Rise of James Brown, because it covers most of his career. And you have a lot of intense performances by him. You see the evolution of his style, and this is all in the context of the Civil Rights Movement because he became involved in that movement and he became involved with politics. And he ended up, much to my surprise, I did not know this. I'm from Georgia, Carol. I did not know about his activism, and especially I did not know that he took a right-hand turn when he supported Richard Nixon's 1968 presidential campaign. The other thing about the film is that there's one thing about the film that haunted me, which is like Thelma and Louise and Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, We see the rise, but we are denied the fall, and we're left pondering that fall.
Well said, Don. Quite right. Well, I am a big fan of Alex Gibney, so I of course got the screener from HBO, and I thought, James Brown, well, okay, I just want to see 10 minutes of this. You couldn't stop watching. It is so engaging. And what I loved the most, I want filmmakers, documentary filmmakers to really see this, because they have used the most interesting and colorful backgrounds for each interview. Lots of work went into this. They really spent their time on the wardrobe, the location, the makeup, the background. It's a film with a master art director behind it. And this adds so much to the story, because you don't go from a stage with all that pizzazz into somebody's living room and they're sitting there on a couch talking. No, you go into a bar or a well-lit studio that's designed to look like a bar, and they're dressed in outstanding clothes, and the backgrounds are really engrossing. The colors, the music, you are glued to the set. He has done a marvelous job, and I'm sure this will win lots of awards. Don't you think, Don?
Absolutely. And Carol, I think I might have buried the lead here. It was produced by Mick Jagger.
Yes. He produced it. Amazing.
Yep.
What I hear is that Alex is currently works on 6 to 8 documentaries at a time. He has a whole production company in New York, and he is the man to go for. If you want to get it produced, he is a great producer. And Mick Jagger did a fabulous job. Somebody put in so much time and attention. I have not seen interviews this well directed and art directed ever in a doc that I can remember.
Right, and also, before I forget, Jagger also appears in the film. He appears talking about James Brown. Carol, you know, this issue about James Brown film and the topic that you may not be interested in, and then you see the movie and you're so glad you saw the movie, that's something I've learned about documentary films. That can be about very obscure subjects, and you would look at it and look at a title and think, I have no interest in that whatsoever. But when you put the film on...
And then you put it on and you can't stop. I say to my daughter, let's just give it 10 minutes. And about 20 minutes later, I say, I can't turn it off. And she says, no, it's a good film. Let's watch it, you know. And you are engaged in subjects you would never, ever want. But I totally agree. And that's why we have to keep bringing more and more films like this to filmmakers' attention, so they can enjoy their fellow filmmakers' works. So we want you to know that we're looking for more independent documentaries to review. Don and I are both on First Run Features and HBO mailing list, so we get their new releases. But we would like to get more independent films that have just gotten distribution, or let's say within 6 months or so, and then we'll review them for you. So submit them to us. And you can do that by going to the website, fromtheheartproductions.com, and sending me, Carol Lee Dean, at att.net, an email, and we'll talk to you about your film. So thank you, Claire and Don, for a lovely show.
Oh, yeah.
Well, thank you.
Okay, mm-hmm. So we'll do this next month, November, more films.
Okay, it's a date.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, everyone. Be well.
Bye.
Bye.
I want to remind our listeners that David Raiklin is a brilliant and talented award-winning musician who scores films and can compose music for a trio or for a full orchestra. David is a very good friend to the independent filmmaker and comes highly recommended by From the Heart Productions. If you need music to help tell your story, please contact him at davidraiklin.com. That's David, RAIKLEN.com. And Carol and I want to thank you for tuning in to The Art of Film Funding. Please visit our website at FromTheHeartProductions.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good luck with your films, everyone.